This is Barbara Ridenour. I'm back with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated June 10th, 2016. We'll continue the reading with the obituaries. Decatur, Joan Leslie Lang, died February 23rd, 2016. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 11th, 2016, at Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. S. Diane Spiegel Walton of Decatur, age 63, died Sunday, June 5, 2016. A celebration of her life will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, June 11th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 12 noon to 1 p.m. at the funeral home before the service. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Hospital. Betty L. Johnson, 66, of Decatur, died Tuesday, June 7, 2016. Services are at 1 p.m. Saturday at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation is 1 hour before services. Burial is in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois. Melvin Dean Curry, 93, of Decatur, died Thursday, June 8, 2016. Funeral services will be held at 2:30 p.m. Monday, June 13th at Kerr Brothers Funeral Home, 3421 Harrodsburg Road in Lexington, Kentucky. Burial will follow in Lexington Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday at the funeral home. Memorial contributions are suggested to Arlington Christian Church of Lexington, Kentucky. We'll turn now to the opinion page, and there are no letters to the editor today on the opinion page. So we'll read thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the first French fried 5K, which proved you can combine exercise and fun. Although the inaugural event, a fundraiser for the Decatur celebration, suffered from rainy weather and some of our first-year organizational issues, that didn't stop some 400 participants from having a good time. Central Illinois runners, walkers, and those only there for the food prove that they know how to have fun. Thumbs up to Webster Cantrell Hall, which, as part of celebrating its 100th year, held a reunion last weekend. Although Saturday's rainy weather definitely dampened the turnouts, the events Friday and Saturday were a reminder of the important role the organization plays in our community and state. It was the first time that alumni of Webster Cantrell had come together, but Executive Director Martin Harris said it would not be the last. Thumbs up to the Carhartt Bassmaster College Midwestern Regional, which was held last weekend on Clinton Lake and hosted by the Village of Forsyth. The tournament started with 93 boats on Friday, and 20 boats competed for a chance to advance to the national championships. Fishing was good on the lake, especially during Friday's near-perfect weather. Thumbs up to the 10th anniversary of the Macon County Animal Shelter. At one time, the shelter was a disgrace, and there were continuing operating issues. In fact, it may have been the worst shelter in the nation, but the Macon County Sheriff's Office, Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation, and other groups came together and found a location for a new and well-run shelter. Work has been ongoing to make the facility excellent. Thumbs down to our state leaders, specifically Governor Bruce Rauner, House Speaker Michael Madigan, and Senate President John Cullerton, for spending the last week blaming each other for the state's failure to enact a budget. Gentlemen, we elected you to solve this problem, not point fingers. Get to work. Thumbs up to our local attorney Ed Booth, who recently retired from serving as legal counsel for the Decatur Park District and the Decatur Public Building Commission. Booth, 89, served as the commission's attorney for more than 30 years and saw the commission purchase, construct, and maintain facilities like the current Macon County Office Building and the new Law Enforcement Center. He said the first thing he was going to do during his retirement was sleep late. Now we'll turn to the Life page, Faith and Values. Getting closer, Habitat for Humanity Restore moves forward. moves toward opening. Decatur. Do-it-yourselfers don't have much longer to wait for Decatur's Habitat for Humanity Restore to begin regular operation. Many donors have already been finding the business open by chance since Trina Atterbury, a Decatur native, started work May 2nd as the store manager. She's down here every day, said Executive Director Ed Smith. The other day I came down and helped her unload a trailer of flooring tiles, and she said she got another trailer or two from the same guys in the afternoon. It wasn't a Thursday either, and the day of the week the restore has been officially open from noon to 4 p.m. since January to receive donations at 932 East Wood Street. Indeed, donations have been so plentiful, the store has also begun selling its wares during those hours out of necessity. Atterbury, 56, said she wanted to get back to Decatur after retiring from a longtime position as subcontracts administrator for Chicago Bridge and Iron Company, a job that took her all over the country. Daughter of the late Herman and Eunice Rulander, she attended Stephen Decatur High School and began her career at the Clinton Nuclear Power Station, but it took her away from the Decatur area in 1991. Her priorities are to get the new restore open by July and recruit enough volunteers to have two or three people on hand to assist her during the hours the store is open, which will be Tuesdays through Fridays and Saturday afternoons. To that end, Atterbury just got the store registered with Macon County as a site where community service hours may be completed. Lost my place. You really can't operate the store with just one person, she said. We will have positions in receiving and on the sales floor. The restore will sell lumber, fixtures, and other building supplies. The chapter doesn't need to fulfill Habitat for Humanity's mission of working alongside low-income people to help them achieve home ownership. That's the supplies the chapter doesn't need for those activities. Habitat took possession of the new store site, most recently the home of Willie's Thrift Shop, and before that a training school for national pipe trades on January 1st. The organization plans to move its offices there from Heritage Behavioral Center, Health Center, create the main store entrance along the west wall into the room housing building supplies, and in the front room along Wood Street to put furniture on display. Generally speaking, the restore's biggest seller is furniture, Atterbury said, but kitchen cabinets and ceiling fans sell fast, too. The Habitat restore welcomes building fixtures and furniture in like-new condition, but does not accept clothing, linens, mattresses, or electronics. Smith said he stood corrected when he went to reject an old baby crib, and Atterbury said cribs can be transformed into benches in a process called upcycling. We hope to offer those items to our customers, both for their own projects and already finished, she said. We want the restore the first place people think of when they need a toilet, a couch, replacement door, or novelty item. If you go, it's the Decatur Area Habitat for Humanity Restore, receiving donations and customers from 2 to 4 p.m. Thursdays. It's at 932 East Wood Street. Call 217-425-6446. That's 425-6446 between 8:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday. Dear Abby, son's kind-hearted parents feel victimized by girlfriend. Dear Abby, my husband and I have a 22-year-old son who has moved back home due to his relocating. His girlfriend of 6 months has done some suspicious and devious things. We've tried to overlook them, but the latest involves a car our son asked us to sell her because she was in a bind because of some stupid financial decisions she had made. We felt sorry for her, so we sold her the car for less than half of what we could have gotten on a trade-in, since we were going to purchase a newer car. Now, 1 month later, she's taken the car and traded it in on a different one, no doubt gaining the extra equity. I'm angry to the point that I have no longer want her in my house. Are we wrong to feel taken advantage of? I would ask that we have always tried to help our son, only son as much as we can. The result has been that we've been taken advantage of and not treated the way we think a son should treat parents who are not exactly well off. Please don't reject this letter, as your advice is really needed. Signed, Steamed in the South. Dear Steamed, it appears your only son and his girlfriend may be birds of a feather. Both have taken advantage of your kindness and generosity in one way or another, and you have every right to be upset about it. While you can't do anything about the past, that doesn't mean you can't open your eyes and watch out for yourselves in the future. If your son is planning to move the girlfriend in with you, you put a stop to it now. If you don't, I predict you'll be taken advantage of as long as they're under your roof and until they move out, which may not be for the foreseeable future. Excuse me. Mortgage burning. Dear Abby, I have a question about something you don't hear about much anymore. Do people still have mortgage burning parties? If I had a party, do you think guests would feel like I was bragging because I've paid off my home and they haven't? Any advice would be great. Just Happy in Maryland. Dear Just Happy, congratulations for having paid off your mortgage. However, unless your guest list is short and includes only people who you are very close to, I'm not sure it would be appropriate to throw the kind of party you described for exactly the reason you mentioned. Disapproving parents. Dear Abby, my family doesn't seem to approve of my taste in who I date. I prefer to go with older guys, but I'm 14. My parents actually reported my last boyfriend to the police when they found out his real age. I'm now with another guy in high school who respects me, but my parents don't approve of him either. What should I do? Signed, Confused in Missouri. Dear Confused, start concentrating on school, sports, and group activities. In other words, wait to date until your parents agree you are old enough and can find someone of whom they approve. Now let's turn to the Decatur Tribune online and start with news to know. RCC's Brower, Danville Community College Presidency finalist. Danville, Douglas Brower, Vice President for Economic Development and Innovative Workforce Solution for Richland Community College in Decatur, along with three other community college leaders, made the cut after Danville Area Community College's Presidential Search Committee interviewed 10 candidates this week. Brower will meet the public June 21st. The Decatur Tribune received information this afternoon, Thursday, that Brower is one of the four finalists. City Council members discussed video gaming in study session. Council members on Monday began discussion of video gaming in the city of Decatur with city staff presenting information on spending, the number of locations, and other data related to the issue. During a Monday study session, City Finance Officer Greg Zintara indicated that as of today, there are 75 sites in Decatur that have video gaming with a total of 353 machines, up from three establishments in December 2013. Decatur establishments collected a total of $17,936,289 in net terminal income on almost $70 million in funds placed in machines in Decatur in 2015. Funds in and gaming entities are projected to generate more than $23 million in net terminal income in 2016. Video gaming terminology relative to the gaming revenue discussion include the following. Funds in, defined as money placed into gaming device terminal by the player. Funds out, from any wager plus player return of unplayed monies placed into the device terminal. Net terminal income, NTI, money placed into gaming terminals, minus credits / winnings paid out to players. NTI, revenue shared by the parties. Net terminal income is distributed as follows in the following percentages. 35% to the gaming device owner-operator. 35% to local establishment, the local establishment Decatur license holder, and 25% to the state of Illinois, and 5% to the city of Decatur. There were no recommendations or formal decisions made during Monday's study session, and staff will return at a later date with additional info. In other business, council gave the go-ahead to perform or take critical steps toward performing sewer-related infrastructure work, totaling almost $16 million in Decatur. First installment of real estate tax bills due June 10th, that's today. Macon County Treasurer Edward D. Yoder has announced the first installment of real estate tax bills are due June 10, 2016. Taxpayers have several options in paying their bills. Taxpayers can mail their payment postmarked by the due date. Payments are accepted in person in the Treasurer's office in the Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main, room 302. Decatur, during the hours of 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. In addition, there is a secure drop box located outside on the north side of the county office building, available 24 hours. Most Macon County banks and credit unions accept real estate tax payments for their customers. Finally, payments can be made through the Illinois ePay system at www.illinoisepay.com. Taxpayers who normally receive their tax bills at their home and have not received a tax bill should call the Macon County Treasurer's Office at 424-1426. That's 424-1426. If your tax bill is paid by escrow, your bank or mortgage company is required by Illinois state law to send a copy of your tax bill to the homeowner within 15 days. Effective June 30, 2017, Williams resigns as Maroa Forsyth Superintendent. Mitchell Williams resigned Thursday as Maroa Forsyth Superintendent. When asked by this reporter, Maroa Forsyth School Board President Russ Corey provided this statement on Williams' resignation. The superintendent delivered his letter of resignation to me on May 26th. That is effective June 30th, 2017. The board has not had an opportunity to act on the resignation, and there is nothing further to say at this time. Williams' present contract will expire at that time. In an interview with this reporter earlier today, this reporter is J. Thomas McNamara, Friday, Williams said that he is proud of his years serving the Maroa Forsyth District as its superintendent, as he is finishing his 14th year in education there, including the last 10 years as superintendent and previous four as a principal. I had a job to do, said Williams, who took the professional route in his conversation with this morning after submitting his resignation the previous day. We provided facilities for our teachers to do what they do, which is to educate our kids. Since Williams became superintendent there, much has changed there in terms of facilities, like new elementary and high schools, and new athletic facilities that all students can enjoy. In addition, the district's enrollment has grown from 273 in the high school to 390 to 395 this fall, and the district-wide enrollment growth is somewhat around 25% since he became superintendent. We're going to be pushing 1,260 to 1,270 students this fall. Williams has one more year to serve the district as its superintendent, and he will do so with his head held high because he knows he has not done anything wrong, that he is a victim of the times where the district is experiencing some financial problems that are being laid at his feet. I have a lot of good relationships with former students of ours who now have either doctor, medical, or law degrees, and a number of other students who have gone on to land decent jobs to provide for themselves and their families, said Williams in our conversation. The superintendent also said that he will continue to look proudly on the district and what is achieved under his leadership and direction because I have a vested interest in the future of this district. I will have more on this developing story in a future print edition of the Decatur Tribune. And this is Osborne Online, observation on two places, five unnamed people. I stopped to pick up an item at a local service station/convenience store on the city south side early one morning last week. When I pulled into a parking space, I saw that two police officers had two young men handcuffed. One officer was using one of his hands to hold one young man's arm while he used the other to check his pockets. A short distance away, the other officer was processing the other young man in exactly the same way. I walked past the officers and young men as I was heading to the door of the convenience store, and I overheard one of the young men ask, "Don't I have the right to free speech?" He must have been responding to something the officer had told him, but I don't know for sure because that was the only part of the conversation I heard. When I got inside, I asked the cashier what was going on outside. She replied in one word, "Drugs." When I walked out the door and I headed to my car, I walked by the officers and the young men. This time, the same young man I had heard earlier say, "I am not going to jail," with a voice that sounded like he feared that happening. I got into my car and drove off, catching another glimpse in my rearview mirror of the two officers, the two young men with uncertain futures. As I grow older, it bothers me even more to see young men with the opportunity to be whatever they want to be, apparently throwing their lives away because of some wrong decisions. Drug usage has become an epidemic in Decatur and across the nation and is leaving so many destroyed lives, families, and potential in its wake. If that was what was really happening to these two young men, now what a shame and what a waste. As I drove on toward the newspaper's office, I also thought of the police officers who were processing the young men and how often they get little or no respect. I've always felt our police department is the finest anywhere, and while that judgment may be somewhat due to knowing so many of them over the years, it is also backed up by the positive statistics of crime reduction in our community. May God bless them and their efforts and keep them safe, as they keep us safe. Later that day, I visited the Secretary of State's driver's license facility on North Woodford. Fortunately, I noticed that the sticker on the license plate of our newspaper van expired this month, and unlike earlier this year when I had to pay a fine for not noticing the sticker on my infamous car, Christine was due. Car didn't warn me, I was much more aware of sticker shock. I don't know anybody who gets up in the morning all excited because they have to go to the driver's license facility for some reason. Tooth extraction may be looked upon more favorably. When I entered the door of the facility, the line I had to join to reach the person who could help me looked like the TSA lines at O'Hare in Chicago that I've been seeing on television news lately. There was a lot of line bonding that goes on when you're in a long line for the same reason. Everyone else in this line and most of the people seemed pretty patient, unless someone came into the facility and tried to crowd into the line. He was told where to go immediately, that is, the end of the line. It seems to me the facility was understaffed. There were a lot of numbered counter openings with no one working there, and I attributed that to no state budget and department cuts coming out of Springfield. I'm sure there's a lot of stress and uncertainty on the remaining staff and handling so many people, and after what seemed like forever, I finally made it to the counter opening at the west end of the facility. I think it was number 2, but not for sure. The state employee who helped me was the picture of calmness, friendliness, and help, and after dealing with her, I left the facility with a very positive feeling. Despite everything going on at the state level, she gave me great service. As I move through our community each day, I observe a lot of unmanned people experiencing different circumstances, like the 5 I mentioned in this column. I see some bad and some ugly, but I see far more good and beautiful in the people of Decatur, Illinois. I am proud to live and work here and feel the spirit of this community. This was posted June 3rd, 2016. Lunch yields study on trash receptacle behavior. It was at lunchtime and I pulled into the Taco Bell on East Pershing Road, went inside, bought my lunch, sat down in a booth in the southwest corner of the restaurant. It was the beginning of an interesting lunch, although I was alone. Located on the other side of a huge glass window was only about 6 or 7 feet from where I was sitting was a trash receptacle. The trash receptacle was part of the drive-through lane so that when someone had a wrapper or something else to throw away, he or she could drop it at the receptacle and drop the trash without even getting out of the car. It's not even a long reach from the car window. It takes no effort and only about a second to use. Here's the interesting part of my lunch besides the great tacos. I started watching how many drivers stopped at the trash receptacle and made a deposit. During the 15 or 20 minutes I was eating lunch, most of the drivers who received their orders at the drive-thru window kept on driving. Either they did not have any trash, they were taking trash home with them, or they didn't see the trash container, which, if it was the latter case, with such poor eyesight, they shouldn't have been driving a car. What I found most interesting in my lunch research project, parentheses, not government funded, parentheses, was the kind of vehicles people drove who did or did not use the trash receptacle. A young guy who was driving a car that looked to be in such bad shape that I was surprised it made the trip through the drive-thru line, stopped the car, the brakes still worked, and carefully threw his trash into the receptacle. Good for him. The condition of his car did not reflect on his concern about putting his trash into the proper place and not leaving it strewn all over the drive-thru lane. Besides, maybe because of financial problems, the old car was all he could afford. The other extreme of that was what I witnessed with the young guy in the old car happened a short time later with a middle-aged man driving an expensive, fairly new blue car with a darker blue roof covering it. He pulled up to where it appeared he was going to throw something in the trash receptacle, and then, within a foot of the receptacle, he dropped his trash on the ground next to it. I assume, with shot accuracy like that, he didn't go to college on a basketball scholarship. The man in the blue car then drove off as if nothing had happened, leaving his trash on the ground. The man may have been driving a big, expensive car, but the sensitivity to littering part of his brain was nothing but a junker with bald tires. Of course, no conclusion should be drawn about those two people as setting some kind of standard. People who litter come in all sizes, shapes, and forms. Littering crosses all economic boundaries. I'm just reporting two examples. Overall, the time I was eating my lunch, I found of those people who needed to throw out trash from their vehicles, most of them made a conscious effort to put their trash inside instead of outside the trash receptacle. I know that Taco Bell and other fast food restaurants have employees who clean up the trash out of the drive-thru lane, and that was starting to happen before I left Taco Bell. However, I think knowing that your trash will be cleaned up by someone else if you throw it on the ground should not be an excuse for littering. Depositing it in the trash receptacle is a solid habit and a great example for two young children. The worst offender of throwing trash on a drive-thru lane is the person that starts throwing trash out of his car before he ever gets to the window to get his order. That's important trash. Don't we have enough imported trash. Don't we have enough imported products without importing trash? Recently, when I was in a drive-thru lane, a young woman started throwing trash out of her car before she got to the window to pick up her order, and I had to wonder if she'd picked up all that trash at other fast food restaurants and was leaving it all at this location. I know a lot more important issues to confront our community today, but not littering is something that should be as easy as breathing. That's all we have time for now with the Decatur Herald and a Review dated June 10th, 2016, and the Decatur Tribune. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a great weekend and week to follow, and stay cool.